45 minutes later, the helicopter pilot picked out the smoke signal, a canary yellow feather drifting over the dark green roof of the forest. The helicopter dropped towards it and hovered above the grass tops in an open glade between the trees standing in the tree line. They saw the police unit, who had pushed the pursuit thus far. It was obvious at a glance that these were not elite bushfighters, but garrison troops from Karoi. They were townies and reserves doing their monthly call-up duties and not enjoying the chase one little bit. Sean and Mutatu exited together, jumping the 6 feet to earth and landing like a pair of cats, in balance with hot guns. They spread out swiftly and took cover while the helicopter soared and hovered 200 feet above them. It took them 15 seconds to make certain that the police had the drop area secure. Then Sean ran across to the leader of the pursuit unit. "Okay, Sergeant," he snapped crisply. "Hit your bottle. Drink, man, drink." The sergeant was red-faced, burnt by the sun, and overweight. Even in the valley heat, he had stopped sweating. It had dried on his shirt in irregular white rings of salt. He didn't know enough to keep himself from dehydrating. Another hour and he would have been a casualty.
"The water's finished."
The sergeant's voice was hoarse. Sean tossed him a precious water bottle, and while the man drank, asked, "What's the line of spoor?" The sergeant pointed to the earth ahead of him, but already Mutatu had picked up the sign left by the fleeing gang. He scampered along it, cocking his head to study the fine details, which were invisible to any but the truly talented eye. He followed it for a mere 50 paces and then doubled back to where Sean waited.
"Five of them," he chirped. "One wounded in the left leg."
The farmer's widow must have given them a good run.
"But the spoor is cold. We must play the spring hare."
Sean nodded.
The spring hare was a technique that he and Mutatu had worked out between them. It could only be effective with a tracker of Mutatu's caliber. They had to be able to guess where the chase was heading. They had to have a good idea of the line and rate of march before they could leapfrog, or spring hare, down the line. Here there was no doubt. The band of terrorists must keep northwards towards the Zambezi and the tribal trust lands, where they could expect to find food and shelter and some rudimentary medical treatment for their wounded. There were many sympathizers amongst the Black Shona and Batonka tribesmen who lived along the valley rim. Those who would not cooperate willingly would be forced to do so at the muzzle of an AK-47 assault rifle. All right, so they would keep on northwards. However, the wilderness ahead was vast. There was hard going and broken terrain, rocky valleys and jumbled granite koppies. If the fleeing band turned only a few degrees off the obvious line of march, they could disappear without trace. Sean ran out into the open glade and signaled the circling alouette, holding his arms in a crucifix. The helicopter responded instantly.
"Okay, Sergeant," Sean called. "Keep after them. We'll go ahead and try to cut the spoor. Maintain radio contact and remember to drink."
"Right on, sir," the sergeant grinned. The brief meeting had given him and his men a fresh heart. They all knew who Sean was. He and Mutatu were legend.
"Give 'em hell, sir,"
he yelled up at Sean, and Sean waved from the open hatch of the alouette as they soared away. Sean swallowed half a dozen codeine tablets for his ribs, which were beginning to ache, and washed them down with a swig from his spare water bottle. He and Mutatu crouched together in the opening of the hatchway, peering down at the canopy of the forest 500 feet below. Only at moments like these, when the hunt was running hot and hard, could Mutatu subdue his terror of flying. Now he leant so far out of the hatch that Sean had an arm around his waist to hold him from the drop. Mutatu was positively shivering in his grip, the way a good gun dog shivers with the scent of the bird in his nostrils. Suddenly he pointed, and Sean yelled to the flight engineer,
Turn 10 degrees left.
Over the intercom, the engineer relayed the change of course to the pilot in the high cockpit. Sean could see no possible reason for Matatu's turn to the west. Below them, the forest was amorphous and featureless. The rocky koppies that broke the leafy monotony were miles apart, random and indistinguishable from one another. 2 minutes later, Mutatu pointed again, and Sean interpreted for him. Turn back 5 degrees right. The alouette banked obediently. Mutatu was performing his special magic. He was actually tracking the fugitives from 500 feet above the canopy of trees, not by sight or sign, but by a weird intuitive sense that Shaun would not have credited if he had not seen it happen on 100 other chases over the years. Mutatu quivered in Shaun's grip and turned his face up at his master. He was grinning wickedly, his lips trembling with excitement. The blast of the slipstream had filled his eyes with tears, and they streamed down his cheeks. "Down!" he yelped and pointed again. "Down!" Shaun yelled at the flight engineer. As the helicopter dropped, Shaun looked across at Roland Ballantyne. "Hot guns," he warned, and Roland signalled his men. They straightened up on the hard benches and leant forward like hunting dogs on the leash. As one man they raised their weapons, muzzles high, and with a metallic clatter that carried above the roar of the turbo engines, they locked and loaded. The helicopter checked and hovered 6 feet above the baked dry earth. Shaun and Mutatu jumped together and cleared the drop zone. As soon as they were clear, they went down into cover, facing outward. Shaun's FN was at his shoulder as he scanned the bush around him. The scouts came boiling out of the hatchway and scattered to adopt a defensive perimeter. The helicopter climbed away, empty. The second they were in position, Roland Ballantyne signalled across to Shaun with a clenched fist. "Go!" Well separated, Shaun and Mutatu went forward. The scouts spread out and covered them, eyes glinting and restless trigger fingers cocked. Mutatu had brought them down in a bottleneck, where a series of steep rocky ridges formed a funnel. The apex of the V was cut through by a dry riverbed. Stormwater over the millennium had sculpted a natural staircase that climbed the ridge, and the elephant herds that used this natural pass had worn the contours and levelled the gradients. Would the fleeing band have traded time for stealth? Would they have chosen the elephant highway rather than toil up the jagged, rocky ridge at another, less obvious point? Mutatu flicked his fingers underhand, signalling Shaun to cast the eastern approach to the pass. Shaun was as good a tracker as any white man alive. To save precious time, Mutatu would trust him with such a simple cast as this. Shaun moved across the sun, placing it between him and the ground he was searching. It was the old tracker's trick to highlight the spoor. He concentrated all his attention on the earth, trusting the hovering scouts to cover his back. They were all good men. He had trained them himself. He felt the little electric thrill of it as he picked it up. It was close in, against the cliff face. One of the round, water-worn river boulders had been displaced. It was sitting a quarter of an inch askew in the natural dish of earth that had held it. He touched it with a fingertip just to check. He would not call Mutatu and risk his scorn until he was certain. "Little bugger will mock me for a week if I make a bum call." The boulder was the size of his head, and it moved slightly under his finger. Yes, it had been recently dislodged. Shaun whistled, and Mutatu appeared at his side like the genie of the lamp. Shaun did not have to point it out. Mutatu saw it instantly and nodded his approbation. The file of fugitives was anti-tracking skillfully. They had moved up the watercourse in Indian file, keeping in close under the precipitous rocky side. They had used the river boulders as stepping stones to hide their tracks, but this one had been slightly dislodged by the weight of the men passing over it. Mutatu darted forward. 100 or so paces further on, he found the spot where the wounded terrorist's foot had slipped off one of the stepping stones and touched the soft white sand. The foot had left a brush mark. Only the highly trained eye would have noticed the faint shade of colour difference between the surface grains and the freshly exposed grains of sand from below. Mutatu knelt over it and studied the faint scuff mark. Then he blew gently on the surrounding sand to gauge its friability. He rocked back on his heels while he pondered the factors that had affected the colour difference in the grains. The moisture content of the sand, the angle of the sun, the strength of the breeze, and most important, the time elapsed since the sand had been disturbed. 2 hours, he said with utter finality, and Shaun accepted it without questions. 2 hours behind them, Shaun reported to Roland Ballantyne. How does he do it? Roland shook his head in wonder. He brought us straight here, and now he gives us the exact time. He's gained us 8 hours in 15 minutes. How does he do it, Shaun?
Beats me, Sean admitted. He's just a chocolate-coated miracle.
Can he spring hair us again?
Roland demanded. He spoke no Swahili. Sean had to translate.
Spring hair, Matatu?
Ndio bwana.
Matata nodded happily and preened under the patent admiration of the colonel.
Leave four men to follow up on the ground, Sean advised. Tell them to follow the water course and there's a good chance they'll pick up the spoor at the top.
Roland gave the orders and the four scouts moved away up the funnel in good order. Sean called down the helicopter and they scrambled aboard.
They flew on into the north.
However, they had not been airborne for more than 10 minutes before Matatu wriggled in Sean's grip and yelped,
"Turn! Turn back!"
Under Sean's direction, the helicopter made a wide circle, and Matatu was leaning halfway out of the hatch. His head swung quickly from side to side as he peered downwards, and for the first time he seemed uncertain.
"Down!" he cried suddenly,
and pointed to a long streak of darker green vegetation that filled a shallow, kidney-shaped depression in the terrain ahead of them. The Alouette descended gently, warily. Matatu pointed out a landing zone at the far side of the depression. The scrub below them was dense and thorny, and the ground was studded with ant-heaps. These were bare towers of concrete, hard, red clay, each as high as a man's shoulder, like headstones in a cemetery. They would make the landing difficult and dangerous.
"A little bugger is going to take us into the worst possible LZ, Sean thought bitterly. "Why does he have to choose this particular spot?"
The helicopter checked in mid-air, and Sean turned his head and yelled at Roland, "Hot guns, man!" and then followed Matatu. They landed side by side and scurried forward, dropping into cover behind one of the ant-heaps. He did not turn his head to watch the other scouts come out of the hatch. He was watching the tangled thorn scrub out ahead, sweeping his flanks with a darting, penetrating scrutiny, holding the FN levelled and his thumb on the safety. Although it was a million-to-one chance that there was a terrorist within 5 miles of the LZ, still the landing drill was second nature to all of them.
"No gooks here," Sean assured himself. And then, incredibly, stunningly, they were under fire. From the thorn scrub on their left flank, AK fire raked them. The sharp, distinctive rattle of the fusillade swept over them. Dust and chips of red clay flew from the side of the ant heap only inches in front of his face. Sean reacted instantly. He rolled and realigned, and as he brought the FN to bear, he glimpsed from the corner of his eye a grisly little cameo of death. One of the scouts, the last man out of the hatch, was hit. As his feet touched the ground, a burst of AK fire caught him across the belly. It doubled him over and drove him backwards 3 sharp paces. The bullets, exiting from his back, pulled his body out of shape. They sucked half his guts out of him and blew them in a misty pink streak through the stark sunlit air. Then he was down and gone into the scrub. As Sean returned fire, the realization flashed in upon him. Matatu has dropped us into direct contact. He punctuated his thoughts with short, measured bursts of the FN. The little bugger has been too bloody good this time. He's dropped us right on their heads.